everybody should be thinking about it. I think you even see companies that are not SaaS companies investing in these marketplaces and these platforms. And I think that's only going to continue to happen. Not everyone should be trying to be a platform. That's a mistake you see in early stage startups, is they think, well, that's where the money is, which is true. But you need to understand the dynamics of the platform to go off it. And this is what we saw in the data in the report, right? There are some industries where this journey is not as far as along. And one is where you have highly regulated data. Fintech, for example, healthcare, HR is another one that's lagged. Again, where you see this like personal data, it's been not as fast as, say, marketing or sales technology or IT to build like these thousands and thousands of integrations. In the report, you did see companies that were in those industries were just not as far along on the journey. But having said that, even those companies at this point still have ecosystems around them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Boundaryless Conversations podcast. On this podcast, we meet with pioneers, thinkers, and doers, and we talk about the future of business models, organizations, markets, and society in our rapidly changing world. Today, I'm joined by my regular co-host, my colleague at Boundaryless, Shruti Prakash. Hello, Shruti.
Hello, everybody.
Thank you so much for coming. Today, we also have one returning guest and one of his colleagues at HubSpot. They are not just two amazing experienced platform experts working at one of the most outstanding platform companies in the world, but they also are two of the co-authors of an amazing report that came out just a couple of months ago, The State of Platforms Report 2024. Welcome to Kelly Sarbin.
Thank you for having me.
Hello, and Scott Brinker.
Wow, thanks for having me back again.
Kelly, you are a platform ecosystem advocate at HubSpot. Scott, you are vice president of platform ecosystem at HubSpot. So my question for you as a starting point is why HubSpot has been supporting the idea of these reports. You know, of course, your partners that have been involved from other companies that have been involved into this conversation. But really, can you give us an overview of the report itself and why HubSpot is doing it?
I think the overview of the report itself is really to do a deep dive on the platform business model and how that works in SaaS, specifically B2B mm-hmm. SaaS. You know, there's a concept of a technical platform that most people in SaaS understand, but not everyone really understands what the platform business model is and how it operates. And we looked at the top 50 SaaS companies by revenue to really understand how they are approaching this and how many of them are fitting this model, which, as a spoiler alert, they almost all are, right? So we not only got data those companies, but we also got extra expert contributions from people who are doing this in the field and leading the way. So we really wanted to break down the model itself, enable people to understand how this model works, because whether you're a platform or a point solution, you need to be operating in this environment in order to be successful. So we really want to share that knowledge. And I think, you know, why HubSpot would do that is a couple reasons. One thing is platforms only work if all the stakeholders understand it. So we want to contribute to our own ecosystem and community around these models, because we're working with our partners. If they understand our motivations, we understand their motivations, it's going to be more successful. The other thing is, one of the reasons Scott created this advocacy position at HubSpot is really just to continue to build the brand of HubSpot as a platform. You know, HubSpot has been around for quite some time, and it started out itself as what one would call a product, not a platform. And it's gone on that journey. And I think as you grow and evolve, you want to make sure that customers, prospects, partners understand that you've made that transition and you're investing in it further.
I would just add on to that. I mean, this has been HubSpot's MO pretty much from the beginning. The way we win customers, the way we've grown as a company, is by focusing more on education than like classic, okay, here's marketing our own product and what our own product does and all the cool things you can do with our own product. HubSpot Academy really set the stage years ago for teaching a whole bunch of marketers about the power of inbound marketing in a way that was pretty agnostic to the actual software you were using. And that continues through to today. So when Kelly joined HubSpot, this was very much the same vision we had around the platform side is, yeah, HubSpot has an agenda of ourselves being a very successful platform. But frankly, being able to contribute to the knowledge, the understanding, the discussion around platforms, building them, managing them, just because there was, you know this very well, right? There have only been a few voices out there that have really been contributing a lot to this. It's such a big area and it's growing so fast that, yeah, part of this was just getting ourselves into the conversation in a way that would bring value to a bunch of other people who were interested in platforms too.
Yes, it's an industry that is at the same time 10-ish years old, still very much in flux, where words still don't have a very solid meaning, right? So the let's say the ontology of platforms is still in flux after 10 years, which is amazing, I think. And what is the a good information architecture that can help our listeners understand what's inside the report? So if you have to explain to someone, like, I don't want to say a 5 years old, but let's say 17 years old, what platforms are, where would you start to draw the lines and say, there's this side and that side. So can you help us like give an overview of what the conversation around platforms should be about today?
You want to give an architecture of the report?
So I think in terms of the architecture of the report itself, I think there's about a 20-page introduction laying out what a platform business model is, right? And I think really just understanding that what platforms exist to do is to connect people who are providing services or products and people who are consuming those services and products, and then really sets out a few different examples where when you get into the world of tech, because platforms exist even the town square, right? A shopping mall, those are platforms. They're connecting consumers and people selling. But once you get into tech, the game changed and you have Uber, which a lot of people in a more casual sense think of Uber, oh, it's just a marketplace, but it is a platform connecting riders and drivers. And then you get into technical platforms where you have the technology partners building on top of the platform, but also, again, to be connecting with the customers. So, and then you get multi-partner types, right? You get solutions partners, you get system integrators, you get resellers, and all of these are trying to connect with each other across the platform. And the core role of the platform is to make those transactions as seamless as possible, to optimize the exchange of value, reduce friction. So the report kind of walks through that evolution of the different types of businesses that might be running a platform business model. And then the first half of the report is really sharing the data that we gathered from the top 50 SaaS companies. And that includes their org charts, which is not a particularly sexy topic, but for those of us in platforms and partnerships, it's a very important topic to how these actually work and how the orchestration amongst all these different stakeholders takes place. But we also looked at the number of apps these companies have, what their marketplaces look. Do they have a services and app marketplace, or are they one? And then the last half of the report is really just the contributions from different experts in the field who are doing this at the best companies to share what they've been seeing and learning on their journeys.
One of the things that Kelly's been one of the champions for in the industry is partnerships have obviously been around a long time. The idea of channels and distribution channels pretty much from the beginning of the software industry. We've also had this view of like, okay, yes, there are this idea of ISVs and building things on technical platforms. And we even have, yeah, things more of like technology, strategic alliances and whatnot. But yeah, in many ways, you've seen these different components sort of being viewed through their own lens. And this evolution that's been happening here over the past several years, but really starting to build momentum, particularly these past couple years, of really taking a more holistic ecosystem view. Okay, yes, we have a channel here, but then we have services partners who perhaps aren't just channel sellers. There's other kinds of services around this. We have these ISVs, and it's not just looking at each of those individual pieces and saying, yeah, okay, they're each contributors to an ecosystem. But it's starting to recognize more and more the power of how do we connect those things together. And so I thought, the data we collected, and this was in conjunction with, you know, Jay McBain of Canalys, also Asher Matthews from Partnership Leaders, like trying to get as wide of a collection of folks, getting the actual data on, okay, for these top 50 platforms out there, like, where is the state of, okay, are they treating these things differently? How differently? How are they coming together? Partly in how they present themselves in marketplaces. But then, yeah, as Kelly was just saying, also looking at things like the org structure, how are they internally aligned to support that?
Yeah, I mean, to, let's say, go into the state of platforms as they are today, right? So first is, I want to understand the why. So why is there, let's say, still a need to describe the key patterns of platforms in 2024? And what are the patterns that you're seeing today? How is the architecture changing as you go?
It's funny, like, while the terms ecosystem have certainly started appearing more and more in like general business language and general business discussions, the truth is, it's just there aren't a lot of definitive resources out there that have discussed this. I mean, like, we could probably count on one hand, maybe if we're being really ambitious too, like the famous books or like famous articles in the space. But when you think of this as being such a truly transformational change to like business models and strategy, yeah, it's kind of amazing that there isn't actually much, much more here. And so I think even with different people I talk to every day, it's like even within our partner community, it's a pretty wide dispersion of how deeply people actually understand, okay, wait, what is this platform thing exactly? How does it work? How are the incentives? You know, like, why do we do this? What should be our strategy if we're a participant in this ecosystem? How should we be thinking about our relationship, not just with the platform company, you know, as sort of like a spoken hub, but how do we think about our relationship with all of the other points that are a part of this universe? There's a lot of gap out there. And it's also like not static either. I mean, this is one of the things, like, I think we talked a bit about this the last time we were together too, is there's been such innovation in these past couple years with technology products to help facilitate new kinds of motions within these ecosystems. When we look at products like Reveal and Crossbeam, that initially just, okay, let's optimize this process of looking at overlaps in customers or opportunities or prospects. Okay, that's really cool. But now that we're doing that in a systematic digital way, being able to then start to trigger all sorts of fascinating like insights, automations from that. When you start to look at ways you can do that that aren't just point to hub, you know, looks, but oh, what are ways that, okay, it's not just like the Reveal overlaps between a particular ISV and HubSpot, but it's the Reveal overlaps between that ISV and other ISVs, or between that ISV and other solutions or services partners. This technology is just new. And so the playbooks for what we can even achieve with this from the business side of platforms, they're kind of being written as we go. So, I mean, it's just a really exciting, innovative time, but it also is a great opportunity to say, like, okay, as we collectively are figuring this out, how do we document this? How do we, like, you know, share this? How do we get feedback? How do we keep learning from each other?
Let's say, is once a year kind of report good enough? And where I come from in that is that, let's say, platforms are so dynamic. And I think all of us here know that, let's say, putting a definition to this has been, you know, more and more complex as we go. So how do you sort of address that? And were there any, let's say, older notions of platforms that were broken in this process? I think we had Sangeet Chaudhary in our episode a little bit earlier, and he was speaking about the fact that, let's say, network effects as a topic or a metric to assess how good or bad a platform is, doesn't maybe hold the validity as it did probably a couple of years ago. So just wanted to understand if you've seen any trends in what platforms are, how you measure these platforms and so on with this report.
Yeah, I think that to Scott's point, there's a deep lack of knowledge, not only with people working in partnerships, but if you look at other functions within a company that need to really be bought in on this. So if you ask a typical SaaS CRO, what is a platform or what is an ecosystem? If you ask 1,000, you're going to get 1,000 different answers, probably. So I think this...
Which is good, by the way, right? I mean, it's good because there is so much diversity in the industry.
I think this process of having this conversation in the broader community of executives across all functions within the partnerships field it needs to be ongoing. So it just has to keep going. And to your point, I think that if you look back over the last 3 years, even you've seen a lot of transformation, and I anticipate the next 3 years that will only be accelerated. So I think those conversations are going to continue to evolve. I do think there's something very lasting about the core platform business model that is worth understanding. And I don't think that that core dynamics is going to change. But what I do think is rapidly changing, and organizations, the largest tech companies in the world, are trying to figure out is how do we adjust to the fact that, you know, what we call partners are impacting the entire customer journey, and there's different partner types, and they're involved in the same customer account, and we're sitting at the middle. How do we orchestrate this? It's just something you hear over and over when you talk to these extremely large tech companies that are working on that problem today. So I think 2 years from now, we're going to have some of those answers dialed on. And then there will be another thing that people are trying to work out. So it is an exciting time. It's exciting to be part of this and be watching it grow, because I think it is really in a state of transformation right now.
I was thinking to a reflection that spurred from reading the report, that I would pose the question in a way that is more or less like this. So should everybody be thinking about SaaS and technical platforms and marketplaces right now, or is it something that is still applicable only to a particular part of the industry or the market? So the question is, how pervasive is this? Is something that everybody should be thinking about, or maybe there are some categories in industries that are much less digital, let's say, that are not going to be touched by this revolution, or this is something that really everybody should be thinking about?
Yes, everybody should be thinking about it. I think you even see companies that are not SaaS companies like Walmart or L'Oreal investing in these marketplaces and these platforms. And I think that's only going to continue to happen. I do think not everyone should be trying to be a platform. I think that's a mistake you see in early stage startups, is they think, well, that's where the money is, which is true. But every product cannot be a platform. It just doesn't make sense. But you need to understand the dynamics of the platform to go off it. I do think it's a good call out. And this is what we saw in the data in the report, right? There are some industries where this journey is not as far as along. And one is where you have highly regulated data. So fintech, for example, healthcare. Even there, it's really interesting if you look, and you probably know this if you're ever go to the doctor yourself, right? There's been a leap forward in electronic resources for the patient experience. HR is another one that's lagged. Again, where you see this like personal data, it's been not as fast as say marketing or sales technology or IT to build like these thousands and thousands of integrations. So in the report, you did see companies that were in those industries were just not as far along in the journey. But having said that, even those companies at this point still have ecosystems around them.
It's a really key point here that not every company should be a platform, particularly early in their life cycle. But I think understanding the dynamics of how platform companies are working, I mean, I'm biased because I get to see this every day with small companies and startups that are coming into the HubSpot ecosystem. Like picking an ecosystem or picking two ecosystems and like really tailoring your initial go-to-market, even like the product market fit to a particular ecosystem, is a fantastic way for companies to get a foothold and to grow in a more focused way. I have this very strange hobby of collecting all the little logos of all these MarTech companies around the world. And it's over 13,000 at this point, and we've probably woefully undercounted. One of the big challenges for anyone who has a great idea for a new MarTech company these days is like, okay, well, even if I've got a great concept and I've got a great product, I've got a way I can innovate, how do I break through all this noise? And the only way to do that is you've got to like find a way to focus. And so like coming into an ecosystem, understanding that ecosystem, understanding those customers particularly well, making sure your pitch, your capabilities like really match to that, then understanding the other players in that ecosystem. Are there other ISVs that I'm complementary to who can help me grow in this ecosystem? Are there those services and solutions partners who can really help me accelerate there? I just think if the more you have an understanding as an entrepreneur how these ecosystems are actually operating and what you can ask. Because we get people ask us for all sorts of wonderful things. They wish we could wave a magic wand and give them. And if I could wave a magic wand and give it to them, I would. But that's not feasible. Making sure that they're just informed and understanding, like, okay, this is the reality of how these ecosystems work. This is the incentive structure. This is the operational structure behind it. And then they're able to develop a strategy and a go-to-market approach that, yeah, really is going to have the right expectations and really be able to work with that structure.
So can we say that whatever you do as a company, you have a possibility to build some kind of digital endpoint to your services or products? So it could be an app or an API, whatever. And you can also build a marketplace of services on top of your products. So these are the two, if I'm not wrong, let's say these are the two major patterns that emerge from the report, right? So one is what we call technical platforms and service marketplaces. But in reality, I mean, everybody, even if you do, I don't know, retail or you do healthcare, or of course, caveats apply when it comes to regulation and so on. But technically, as a company, you should be thinking, even if you're not a digital company, or maybe you're not doing ERP, or maybe you're not doing, CRM or things like that, which can be totally digital processes, you should be thinking about wrapping your stuff into apps or APIs and looking into services marketplaces also from a perspective of distribution. So I'm curious to hear your point of view, Scott, because you are so much into this idea of how marketing is evolving. Being part of an ecosystem is a distribution strategy that every company should be thinking about, either building an ecosystem, which is very hard, very complex, but at least being part of ecosystems as a distribution and go-to-market strategy.
The funny thing is once you start looking at the world through ecosystem goggles, you realize actually, yeah, I mean, the whole world is nothing but ecosystems. So picking one that's like an adjacent thing that any industry should be thinking about is the ad tech space. These are ecosystems within ecosystems. Obviously, you have the major players like Google and Meta and their particular networks. Now you have all these other networks that, you know, are specialized collections of publishers, different channels. We have all sorts of amazing things happening here with retail media. One of the interesting things that has happened is, of course, third-party identifiers such as cookies, you know, the change that happened with mobile apps and tracking a few years back. All that got disrupted. And so on the back of that, you're now seeing a lot of innovation around other new kinds of identity networks. How do we be able to share identity in a more privacy-oriented way across different ad networks? You then actually have the data dimension of this. I think of companies like LiveRamp, you know, that have built like amazing marketplaces in the consumer space for having like, okay, different data sets that capture different facets of either demographic information or consumer behavior information. How do we like pull that in? How do we map it with our own first party data that we have of our customers? Then how do we map that to these right networks, have the right IDs, be able to track? I mean, this is seriously complex stuff. And like, you don't have to be a software company. Like if you're a company dealing in any sort of like major consumer environment where you're trying to reach consumers through all these different digital platforms, like that's all ecosystems. And I think where you see marketing organizations that have just gotten really savvy about being able to understand those dynamics and the technology that they can leverage, it's a competitive advantage because it is a complex field. But if you start to like organize your MarTech capabilities in support of that, and then you sort of build that into your strategy, yeah, there's a lot of creative options you can bring to.
Let's say from an organization point of view and the strategy that it builds, I think I wanted to double click a bit on how does the organization structure, let's say, need to evolve for supporting these platform ecosystems as you see today. And let's say our partnership capabilities becoming sort of ubiquitous in these teams, does it need to get there? How do you see it?
Yeah, so you're asking about the internal structure of the partnership team and what needs to happen. Yeah, I think that's a huge challenge and problem in the industry. And one of the interesting things, you know, partnership leaders who partner on the report collected data on the org charts of these top 50 companies when it comes to partnerships. And one of the interesting things was the top 9 companies all had a unified partner leader, meaning that all of the partner teams were reporting up to that one partner leader. And then in the 50 overall, it was 64%. And then the other 46% had, say, a head of solutions partners, a head of tech partners. One of the common challenges is partner teams get siloed, right? So they try to run this distribution play, but then they can't get marketing support. They're not embedded in sales, and it kind of falls down. Alternatively, you could have someone in a partnership teams reporting to sales, and then the connection to product on, say, the tech partner side, but also on the solutions partner side, starts to thin and fray. And then you have the salespeople trying to push bad integrations, or you have the solutions partners frustrated with the APIs that are available. So really, organizations being able to embed this across all the different functions within their organization and establish clear feedback loops and lines of communication and collaboration is absolutely essential to taking advantage of this opportunity, because otherwise it ends up creating at a minimum a lot of friction. But at the worst, you have people working at odds. So you can have like a sales team KPI'd on one thing and a partner team KPI'd on something else, and they're coming up against each other, which still happens a lot in the industry. So I think that making sure that the ecosystem mindset is embedded across the organization and has representation in the C-suite, whether that's because there is a chief partner officer or because the CEO is so bought in that they've embedded it as a requirement across all their stakeholders, one of those needs to happen to really fully take advantage.
You had a professor who, it said, the only thing I remember from this professor is like one sentence, and it was, structure dictates behavior. We can step back at this and we can look from a strategic perspective and say, okay, whoa, this ecosystem model is now core to the company's strategy. This ecosystem model, it isn't just about these point hub connections, but it's about the connections across the different points together. If you buy into that strategy, if that's going to be like, okay, this is the future, this is how we are going to compete, then if you don't adjust the structure of the organization to truly serve that strategy and treat it as the first class pillar of what your strategy is, yeah, to Kelly's point, you're just going to, even if people can articulate it on a great PowerPoint slide, in the actual day-to-day operations, they're going to keep running into these, yeah, just sort of disjoints and mismatches. Yeah, that's challenging.
If you look at the perspective of the tech company, the SaaS company, for example, right? The ones that you have been targeting most with the investigation, let's say, for them, it's such a central topic, that of platform, that looks like it's very imbued in everything they do. So if I think about, for example, the typical trio of responsibilities that a SaaS company have, like growth, marketing, engineering, and product design. Thinking through the platform lens is something that should be like a shared responsibility more than a responsibility of a single, because it's part growth, it's part product. You, for example, Scott, you spoke about this idea of joint customer needs. So if your research cannot research into how your product interacts with others, you're failing badly, especially if you're a tech SaaS company. So for them, I understand that it's a complex endeavor. There's a lot of need to push this thinking at the organizational level and be sure that everybody speaks the same language. And these three responsibilities very much exist around a shared concept of what our company as a platform is. But from the perspective of maybe the non-tech companies or the companies that are less capable of becoming the pivot of the ecosystem, rather they are maybe trying to reach their customers through existing ecosystems, can we say that understanding platform is at least very essential for the people responsible for sales, go-to-market, and marketing? Because today, the advertising ecosystem is becoming much more competitive. So how do you distribute your products and services if you don't understand the several potential platforms you can use to distribute them? And therefore, should it be a responsibility of a growth and a marketing team to really understand what's going on?
I'd humbly suggest that those pillars of like, and maybe I can just combine like the product and the engineering, there's sort of that side of it. What is our actual product and its value proposition to customers? And then there's, yeah, the growth and the go-to-market side of it. You're right. As we were saying earlier, like as a platform company, like if you can get those things holistically aligned around your platform strategy. Yes, that is important. But even if you're participating in an ecosystem, I still feel like the product side of that is a huge lever. Just go to a narrow example, like from the HubSpot ecosystem, because I know it well, is we have SaaS companies, like say, pick a company like Webflow. They're actually a great platform on their own. They have their own ecosystem around them. But when they look to partner deeply with HubSpot, there's a whole dimension of this from just a product perspective of like, okay, what are going to be the use cases that our joint customers are going to want between Webflow and HubSpot? How should they work? And it might be very different than like joint use cases that might be for a different kind of platform that Webflow is interacting with elsewhere in their ecosystem. But I think really crafting that, because then that feeds in to the growth, the go-to-market side of it. Don't get me wrong, there's a whole set of other things that need to happen operationally around like, okay, well, how are we going to jointly market this? If we're going to have some sort of co-sell or co-service program, you know, what are going to be the mechanics of that, the enablement for that? But I think having going into that with the core value proposition of, oh, by the way, this is from a product to product perspective, the value of these two things working together, it feels super important. It feels like if you like leave out either side, like if you leave off the sales and marketing, the go-to-market side, sadly, in a lot of ecosystems, it's not the case that you build it and they come. I guess actually that's my complaint about software in general for like 50 years. It's like you build it, they don't necessarily beat a path to your door. So you need that side. But the flip side is true too. There's just so much competition for so many things out there that if you can't create a really valuable joint proposition, yeah, just putting a whole bunch of like sales and marketing energy behind it is going to be limited.
If you look at the data from this report, if you look at all 50 companies, on average, they have 1,500 apps. But if you look at the top five, they have an average of 5,000 apps. So if you look at it from the point solution as a strategy to get distribution out of that ecosystem, the far and away best thing that you can do is find an unmet need from the platform that you can fill, because that's going to attract their sellers to you, because you're meeting a need that they might have when they're having conversations. In the marketplace, it's going to stand out, right? If you're just the 5,000 sales enablement tool in a marketplace and you're listed number 50, it's not going to be a great distribution. You're putting a huge burden on your marketing team. They're going to have to create something out of scratch, essentially. So I do think that product component and making sure that you're looking at the product market fit of the ecosystem that you want to heavily invest in has to be a part of the strategy.
Hey, you are listening to this episode on an audio-only version. Get the best of the experience by watching these and other episodes in video on YouTube. Go to YouTube and search for Boundless Conversations, or just take your browser and write blss.io/bcpy, all capital letters, and you get there. On YouTube, you'll be able to subscribe to our channel and get notifications when new episodes are released.
One of the points, I had noted it down while I was reading the report as well, which sort of stood out to me. I hadn't thought about it before that, about the fact that there was distribution, which was, let's say, against partnerships, in the sense that such a low number of partners in comparison to sales employees versus marketers, right? Which I found really interesting. I hadn't thought about it before. So it was interesting to note. I think what Simone and I were discussing as well, I think it will be nice to also touch upon some of the other topics that were covered in the report. So maybe I think proliferation and nicheification was something that was spoken about often. So just wanted to hear both of your thoughts on that. Where is the, let's say, trends heading in that direction? What are the different challenges that you see and so on?
I'm thinking about, as a customer that uses so many platforms, what are the implications also from the fact that there is such a big proliferation of products, that every product is building an ecosystem? So how do you put the pieces together in building your support systems for your productivity? And you're using like 10 apps, and each of those apps have their own ecosystem that they leverage on. So it becomes very complex to make things work together and compose your ideal solution.
Wow, you are definitely using all of my favorite words here. There's composability, there's integration. I see, this is why I love having these chats with you. Again, if I think about it in the context of marketing departments, which is where I know the MarTech stack better than I do even other departments, you know, for like 10 years, they've been surveying marketers about like, okay, what's the thing that's most important to you in your MarTech products that you select? And always, I mean, it's been universal for 10 years, like in the top three, if not the very top one, it's like, oh, it's the integration. I need this stuff to work together. What is surprising is for a good 5, 6, 7 years of that past decade, so many of the companies actually in MarTech refused to prioritize integrations. This was such a desync where, and I say this as a former product person myself, it can be all too easy when you are creating a product that you have an innovation you think you're solving. You're thinking about the stuff you're building. And even if you kind of recognize that there are other things that we're going to have to work with and be related to, it doesn't feel by default is the sexy part of it. Like the sexy part of it is the net new thing that we're doing.
Yeah.
And so somehow in the just the jockeying of what got prioritized, very often like integrations would be near the bottom of the list. In fact, you still would have a bunch of cases where, I mean, I even see this today, people outsource it. They're like, yeah, we're building an amazing product. Oh, we need an integration to this major platform because that's going to be key to our distribution strategy. And they're like, yeah, can we outsource that to someone who can, yeah, maybe build that for us? And of course, when they do outsource it, it tends to not be particularly good and there's no sense of ownership. But what is encouraging to me is over these past few years in particular, I think the memo finally got through because now we talk to more and more companies that integration, they recognize this is core to their product market fit. It's not just like a distribution element, because if you don't actually have the fit of being able to solve what people need, the distribution is just going to be have this tremendous uphill battle, this, you know, tremendous friction. And I think one of the things you've seen, and this came actually, the light bulb went off for me a few years ago from some earlier research that Kelly had done, and you sort of see it come back full force, of if you just look at the proliferation of marketplaces and their visibility within SaaS companies. I mean, it used to be that there were very few SaaS companies that if you went to their main navigation and you tried to look for like integrations or marketplace or anything like that, it just wasn't even there. And then what you started to see a few years ago is, okay, yeah, all the major companies, of course, yeah, this became a very prominent component of the presentation. But what was fascinating is, and I'm trying to remember the exact report, Kelly might remember this one, is something like even 30 some odd percent of the early stage, like Series A startups now had a marketplace, something like in their website that was like, yeah, by the way, this is the things we integrate with and you can look at how it integrates. I don't think we're at nirvana yet, but I think we've now sort of hit a tipping point where most product companies now are treating that sort of integration dimension of as part of basically the core product value proposition. And what you get on the other side of that is you make it easier and easier for when companies are saying, yeah, okay, I have these three products. Do they connect together? The answer probably from all three sides is yes, here's how it is. And what else is in your stack? And you can connect it here too. And so improving.
And what is the, how can I say, the key thing that is going to unlock this? Is it going to be AI? Is it going to be another type of technology or no-code technologies? How is this going to happen?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question because at my last company, I was leading marketing for an embedded iPaaS called Pandium, which that product was selling to SaaS companies to use the tool to basically build their integrations. And they had a little bit of a different model where they were taking care of a lot of the infrastructure, like the OAuth and things like that, but that people are actually coding the integrations themselves on top of that infrastructure. While there's products like Tray and Workato that build the entire integration essentially through connectors. But the other thing we've seen is the rise of unified APIs. There's like merge.dev. There's There's others that are cropping up in a lot of different industries. And this is an attempt to make solve this problem that Scott was talking about, because I agree with him. Over the last few years, you've seen a lot of transformation, but I think it is still something that companies struggle with, because often the engineers, the product people join the company to work on this cool problem that the company's solving. So people don't want to be put off and be like, well, you work on the integrations to other products. It's a constant challenge. And I think there's also been an open source, I think it's from Singer, that is trying to make kind of components that would solve this. But the reality is the problem hasn't been solved from a technical perspective. I think what we've seen is the rise of REST API as this common standard across SaaS companies. And even that's reduced the need significantly for custom dev work. But I do think there's money flooding into this question to try to figure out, like, is there a way that these integrations could be built with less of a lift? So exciting space to watch. I think there's a long way to go in that regard, because it's an incredibly complex technical problem. It also requires a certain alignment in the way that the REST API naturally came to be the default standard in SaaS. So we'll see where it goes. But I do think that would only kind of put fuel to the whole alignment around the business model.
But do you see more consolidation going forward, or more disintegration of the industry moving forward? Because I feel like we are also just out of this low interest rate period, and we have been watching like a Cambrian explosion of products. And now, for several reasons, it can be, for example, that we are at the end of a cycle of adoption and there's less cheap money. Many companies are winding down somehow. So from a perspective of a customer that adopts platforms and ecosystems of products, do you see more consolidation coming up? So a smaller number of products that are more integrated, or maybe a more proliferation of products and or maybe a third way, somehow talking to a chatbot that figures this out and brings you the results back?
Yeah, it's a really interesting time for this. So at least looking at the data from this, from the MarTech side, you are seeing both things happening simultaneously. There's absolutely consolidation happening at the platform level, which that's what you'd expect.
Network effects.
You need a consolidation in order for, because there's only so many ecosystems that, you know, a company can integrate to and integrate to well. But there's this kind of fascinating dichotomy to that almost the more consolidation you get then around a small number of like dominant platforms, actually the easier you make it to then have a proliferation of niche products within that ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And to me, like the classic example of this has always been like things like the iOS and like the Apple Store. I mean, Apple's actually being sued right now by the US government. They're that consolidated. So they've achieved massive consolidation. But in some ways, that consolidation on that platform has allowed this incredible proliferation. Now, some of those apps are big businesses unto themselves. A whole bunch of them are these really niche things, or maybe in cases someone's doing it as their own little side project. And I think you see that. But the key to it there is, right, I mean, regardless of how many things there are in the Apple App Store, the ease by which anyone can like say, oh, I like this app, I put on my phone, and there's not a lot of cognitive load in doing that. There's a consistency to that.
Yeah, maybe I use it just once every month or every year even, yeah. And still it's fine.
And I think you see that pattern is where we're probably going to go with most platforms, certainly in the B2B space. And I agree with you. It's been an interesting past decade of how the SaaS explosion has happened. I mean, normally you're used to like someone creates a platform and then there's an explosion of stuff around it. SaaS, we've basically done it backwards. So we've had an explosion of all these things. And then we're like, oh, it might actually be good if this stuff worked together. And so I think it's taken a little longer. But
I think too, like moving forward, it's interesting to think about where the market pressure is coming from. If you look at it from the customer's perspective, right? Other things being equal, they prefer consolidation because it's easier, right? I don't want to deal with multiple vendors. I don't want to do multiple searches for a new product. It takes time. It's not fun usually. So the question to platforms too, I think there's a huge potential for AI to solve a lot of the friction in that process that would enable more niche solutions to flourish while removing some of the pains that drive people to want consolidation. So now if you go to a marketplace, there's pretty much no SaaS marketplace that is excellent at doing personal recommendations, right? So like, but I feel like all marketplaces are investing in that now. And if AI really comes to have the power to make awesome recommendations and enable the customer to easily find what it is they want, one click purchase, then the friction around disaggregation of the tools becomes lesser. And I think the technical issues I was talking about, if those also make headway in being solved, that's also going to reduce the friction of what it takes to build. So I think there can be a future potentially where you have more and more proliferation of tools, but the customer experience feels more like consolidation.
So it's like the explosion of a supernova, like you have this black hole that collapses on itself and then explodes, because essentially that's how it feels, right? At the same time, we have so many apps, so many solutions, and on the other side, the emergence of this powerful integration technology that is going to wrap everything else. And it really feels like there are these kind of frictions between these two trends. So I'm really curious to see how it ends up. And I have this feeling that it's going to end up in a big explosion at some point in the industry. So that's what I feel. Can we use a few minutes of the conversation to talk about another, I feel very important part of the report that we didn't discuss very thoroughly so far, which is services ecosystems. Everybody was into plugins, apps, and marketplaces of apps. And now we are seeing the pattern of marketplaces moving away from consumer aspects, like in travel or something like that, and moving a lot into B2B. So what is your feeling about how this part of the industry is evolving? So how important are service marketplaces becoming versus traditional sourcing approaches for services? Should companies doing consulting, for example, or other type of services look more into these opportunities? And as I'm saying that, I'm saying companies, and myself, I'm thinking about maybe it's going to be also about democratizing a lot. So it's less about service companies and more about freelancers or service providers that are on their own. So what are the impacts of these transformations on the service industry?
I think it's quite large. And if you look at the cloud retailer marketplaces, services are a key part of those marketplaces. And there's a lot of innovation surrounding services companies to not only sell their own services on the marketplace, but to package up the ISVs that are on that platform and sell them as well. We did see through this research that not all of these top 50, I think it was somewhere around 80%, had services, either directories or marketplaces. A lot of them are just directories. But almost a third of them had a unified marketplace, meaning it listed the apps, ISVs, and all the services partners in the same place. So I do think we're definitely seeing movement in the industry to kind of package up and provide that more digital experiences on selling services as well. And I think that's going to continue to kind of move in that direction. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I definitely think that it's behind the apps in terms of the role of the marketplace. But in the last few years, you definitely see it becoming more and more important.
And something I just add in on that too is because, I don't know, this has been a phenomenon I've been fascinated with, is the pace of technology just keeps accelerating. The rate of innovations, like, it's insane. And we're seeing this right now with the AI side of things at a pace that's unprecedented. People don't change quickly. Organizations don't change quickly. This right. whole field of change management it's real. That's a big hurdle. And so I think one of the data points that Gartner had shared last year was you have this like plummeting reported utilization rate in MarTech stacks. These companies have these like massive MarTech stacks with all these state-of-the-art capabilities. And the utilization, like, it went from like 60% down to 40%. And then this past year, it was like 33%. And I don't, contrary to others in the industry, I don't think that's actually so much a problem about the technology. I think it's the fact that we are underinvested in the human side, the services side, the training side. And this is such a huge opportunity then for these services companies, particularly within an ecosystem where, okay, we deeply understand this technology, and we don't just understand the core platform technology. We understand all the best ISVs, you know, we're able to like architect these solutions together. There's just so much value that those service providers can bring in a platform ecosystem. And to be honest, from a platform company, that then becomes crucial, because if you just continue to let those Gartner numbers go in that direction of like the utilizations from 60 to 40 to 33, eventually someone says like, well, why are we even paying all this money for this software? Because we aren't actually using it. And so I think platform companies have a very vested interest in like, okay, let's make sure we're getting like the right support to companies. And it's not just about the support of how do I configure something in the product? It's how do I think about this stuff? How do I incorporate it into my operations and my strategy, which is what all these solutions and services partners, these consultants, these SIs, these agencies, this is an incredible value add that they bring to it. And so I think that's one of the reasons you see platform companies like, okay, yeah, no, we really need to boost the visibility and facilitate the connections to those right providers.
Because it's also essential for the adoption of a certain solution, right?
Adoption, the success, the outcomes, yeah.
If you don't have this bundle, you can have all the software in the world, but if customers just download that and don't actually maybe activate a couple of subscriptions, but never really step up their adoption, it's going to be very hard to monetize over the long term and so on. So really, so the message for me is, even if you are a technology company, you should be thinking about actively facilitating and generating an ecosystem of service providers that can be complementary to your products as you distribute it on the several platforms or maybe marketplaces that exist.
I was just thinking about what Jason Fried was talking about, Simone, and how maybe even SaaS platforms might sort of, as of today, let's say it's primarily in a subscription sort of model, but even the entire pricing model around SaaS might change. Maybe it's products that are bought once and just sort of continued to be used instead of subscribed monthly. So it was, yeah, interesting to hear both of your thoughts on how this is going to shape as well. I wanted to, as we come to the close of the podcast, also jump into our breadcrumb section and ask you a little bit about if you have any suggestions of movies, books, podcasts, anything that has inspired you in your journey that our listeners can learn from.
I can share a few books I've read recently that I think are interesting learnings. One is Going Infinite by Michael Lewis about the Sam Bankman-Fried. I think there's a lot of themes in there that are always relevant to tech around hype cycles and social proof and how decisions are often made. And I think it's, as always by Michael Lewis, very well written, but I definitely think there's a lot of insights there for people who work in the tech industry. There's also two books published recently, one, Ecosystem-Led Growth by Bob Moore, who's the founder of Crossbeam, and another one's Nearbound, I think, by Jared Fuller from Reveal, which those are both account mapping solutions, but they're both kind of delving into this new world of ecosystems and those types of plays and strategies. So worth checking out.
I would say, boy, I have not had my hands on a good physical book here in a while, but two newsletters that I've been reading religiously. One I suspect probably most folks already know, but I'll plug it anyways. Ethan Mollick, the professor from Wharton, who's just kind of become like, yeah, the beacon of like, okay, here's what's currently happening in AI for how you actually use this in business.
Totally.
I feel like I should plug his book that's coming out here, Co-Intelligence. And then a little bit of a niche one is there's a fellow, J.P. Caslin, who writes a newsletter, Strategy and Praxis, that he's a bit of a contrarian in the strategy world. And it very much like, you know, so many strategy things are like, okay, it's a very deterministic plan sort of thing. His whole approach to it is around, no, actually this stuff is complex in like the Kunevan framework meaning of the word complex. And if you don't sort of like develop strategies in a way that are designed to be adaptive to that, you're probably fooling yourself. And the reason that one always sticks with me is, I mean, to me, this is the whole point of an ecosystem. Companies inherently get deterministic in what they do. And that's why they always have a certain fragility when there are other changes that are happening around them in the marketplace. An ecosystem, by definition, is the antithesis of that. It is a complex thing. So like when you have thousands of different companies, where, okay, at any given moment when a change happens, some will respond, some won't, some will be winners, some will be losers. But the ecosystem as a whole tends to adapt very quickly, you know, to new changes and new opportunities. And so, I don't know, sort of connecting those two dots together.
That's amazing, I think, because it's a very good way to frame the situation we seem to be living, right? A seemingly impossible to manage dimension of this technological development that we are seeing. And looking into that from a perspective of complex thinking and approaching it from a perspective of a natural evolving system may offer some kind of keys for us to kind of relate with that without this urge to understand what's going on, because it feels like we are, as I said before, we are at this moment before the supernova explosion, right? Now everything is kind of collapsing on itself in terms of how the industry has been working in the last 20 years. And so the question is, what's coming up after the supernova explosion? How is it going to be the landscape of technology and services and after this collapse between AI and modularity and APIs and super easy ways to connect pieces together? So really, I think the metaphor of looking through the nature lens and ecosystems and using the real meaning of ecosystems as we talk about them, it's a very good hint. So thank you for bringing this up. Thank you so much. I hope you had a good time with us on the podcast. You enjoyed?
Very much so.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Shruti, for your questions.
Thank you. Thanks, both of you, for joining. It was really nice having you all.
For our listeners, you will find everything, including the amazing recommendations that Kelly and Scott has shared just in the breakroom sessions, but also links to the reports on the website. So if you go to boundaries.io/resources/podcast, you will find this episode in the home. And until we speak again, of course, remember to think boundaryless.